Welcome to the Longest Stride podcast. Each week, we bring you engaging conversations with the global running community. We interview community builders and leaders and the incredible runners who inspire us all. We're by runners for runners. And now, here's your hosts, Jonathan Greenwald and Andre Morgan.
Welcome to the Longest Stride podcast. Most athletes, especially runners, are aware of how important fueling is for performance. Endurance Tap is used by all levels of athletes. Let's hear from the founders, Matt and Pat. Welcome to the podcast, fellas.
Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you here. Lover of the product.
It's like finally, eh?
Yeah, like, you know, I mean, it's one of those things. It's like there's certain go-to that a lot of runners and Canada, and I will say even for myself, there's a certain, you know, certain go-to when it comes to nutrition and stuff, and Endurance Tap has always been in my pocket. Always, it's been for a long time now, and you know, quite a few races. You've traveled with me to many races across different countries, and I'm super excited because not only are you both athletes, which we'll get into, but this journey and this product has been outstanding. And even looking at your Instagram earlier and looking at even some of the ambassadors and athletes that you have associated with this product is outstanding. But let's not go too far. Let's start with you as individuals. So like we usually do, we like to get to know you a little bit more as kind of your athletic background. And I think it might help us get an appreciation for your journey as business partners. So Matt, if it's okay, we'll start with you on your kind of upbringing, athletics, stuff like that.
Sure. Thanks. And it's awesome to be here. I feel like we've been circling around this for quite a while. I think probably like 80% of the folks you've had on this, we've, you know, our ambassadors or we've kind of worked with or talked to over the years. It really has been a bit of a homegrown story. So it's been fun to hear all like the background stories for all the characters in the scene here. So thanks again for having us. Yeah. So I mean, I started, you know, I didn't really do much when I was younger from an endurance perspective. I did cross country and those sorts of things, but really just more for school and for fun. I'd say running in my like mid-20s, I started to get into it when I kind of took care of some plantar fasciitis issues that were kind of holding me back. And I read Born to Run and kind of got motivated through that. And Pat was actually the one who lent me that. And, you know, kind of took the road path and kind of built up to a 10K, some overuse injuries kind of motivated me to get onto the trails where I thought they might be a little bit more forgiving. From there, I got into doing ultras. I started to think that bikes were actually cool, and those captured my interest and added like 70.3 Ironmans to the repertoire of what I was training for. And then, you know, with all the pandemic stuff and all that, I've really been getting into gravel riding lately, just with like not a lot of races happening. So just kind of getting out and just enjoying being out and challenging myself personally, more as a personal challenge than a competition sort of thing. And that's what's really driven me. And actually, I was thinking about it just today. I think probably what predated all of those was this kayak trip that Pat and I did. We called it the Algonquin Death Trip. And we did it with Pat and I, our high school buddies. And we did it with six other friends. And we did this route that had this like crazy long, like 3 or 4K portage that you're supposed to do with a canoe. But we're like, yeah, no, we'll do it with kayaks. Thank you. And so there's a lot of prep. We show up at the outfitters and they're like, do you guys really want to do this? Like basically saying this is a bad idea, especially for a bunch of guys who have no experience kayaking, but we went ahead with it anyways. Fast forward to the portage, which we were all building up towards. And that was the first moment where I kind of had to challenge myself physically, where I actually felt like I had like an out of body kind of experience, and where I pushed myself and then I found myself at the beach where the portage ended. And the adrenaline rush that I got out of that was just infectious. And I didn't realize until years later through reflection, but I think I started to chase that feeling in all the later things I did. And then I started to find it through the ultras. And so, it's funny how that connection actually, you know, goes back to Pat and a mutual experience we had through that. I think it was Pat's brilliant idea as well to do the Algonquin death trip. Yeah. So yeah.
Got bit by the bug.
Yeah.
Yeah. At one point you mentioned barefoot running, like earlier days, like you dabbled into barefoot running, right?
Yeah, you know, that and like, you know, the low drop shoes and when the New Balance Minimus came out and Anton was, you know, pushing those and that all really helped. Like the barefoot, like the Five Finger shoes, I didn't really run in them that much, but I wore them a ton. When they weren't that common, they got a lot of comments and looks, and they're good conversation starters at a cafe because they looked really funny. And they had really like crazy colors too. Like they become much more muted and not obvious, but they were like bright orange and green and stuff back then. And so, but that actually really helped with my foot issues. And that's what really helped unlock me able to do pretty much anything else. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the reason I brought it up, because I think we all dabbled and read something about barefoot running and see if that was an option, just early discovery and how we could do better.
Yeah. Yeah. And the pendulum too, right? I've got a Hokas as well and kind of like run the whole gamut. And for me, I found that just kind of like a low heel drop was worked for me. And so that's why I kind of walk around skateboard shoes or like really low stack running shoes.
Matt is quite the athlete, especially in the trails. He invited me out to a run once, and we were tearing it up in Don Valley. I'm kind of like right behind him. And he's like, we're casually talking about, you know, just life and endurance tap. And I'm the whole time I'm like turning to the side, because I'm like trying to catch up to him. And he's like, how's the pace? We good? We're okay? This is casual, right? I'm like, yeah, it's great, man. It's great. But he's just so like, yeah, just graceful on the trails. It was a treat. I'm not giving myself enough credit for that run, but it was a lot of fun.
Like a gazelle. Thanks so much, Jonathan.
Yeah, like a gazelle.
Yeah, Andre, I just shared trails with you and Bernard as well. That was also a nice day to get out together.
Oh, for sure. I think we maybe rescheduled a couple of times, but that's like the best way to meet and greet someone. And especially if you're doing the same sport without the performance based stuff, you know, but it's an experience, you know, and it is like just a meet and greet. And I'll always remember that, and regardless of how short it was or how long, but yeah, I totally remember that.
Yeah. The beloved Dawn Trails.
Yeah, I know,
bringing
right?
People together.
I'm just saying, we got trails, you know, in the city. So Pat, what's your upbringing like when it comes to athletics?
Yeah, sure. So I think not too different from Matt in some ways, but I did not do track and field. Probably the only running I did back then was to, you know, get to the beer store before it closed or to catch a bus. But my story is actually, I started doing a lot of skiing out west in the mountains, and I got to a very similar age to Matt and sort of mid-20s where I'm like, man, I can't do this anymore. Like, I'm like, you know, flying across the country and going up this mountain, and I can't make it down without being like doubled over, out of breath, and the sort of youthful fitness was just fading away. So my girlfriend at the time said, hey, why don't you try running? And honestly, I was like, I don't know. I see people like running on the spot and it looks ridiculous. Like, I don't think that's for me. She's like, no, like, let's just run around the block. You don't have to run on the spot. And, you know, give it a try. So I did. And it was like something clicked. Like, I was like, oh man, like, this is for me. At the very beginning, you know, I had no technology. I used to come into my apartment. I'd look at the parking meter, the time on the parking meter. And I had a route. I'd figured out it was 5K. I'd run the 5K and then look at the parking meter again to be like, oh, I did it in whatever, probably, you know, half an hour at the time or something. And then I just, common story, went full bore. Like, I hired a coach, a professional triathlete, actually, who was fantastic. I started training for marathons. I ran Toronto Waterfront, did the Big Sur marathon, flew to Japan, did Tokyo, did Hamilton, did Toronto Waterfront again, and was, you know, tracking every heartbeat, every, you know, split. And then I actually, and we may end up talking about this a bit later, but had a fairly catastrophic situation with my knee that sort of took me back a bit. And I've been getting back into it, but since then I've sort of taken it a different way. I don't wear a watch. I just go out and do my thing. Gotten into riding a bit as well. Same thing. I sort of just like, you know, treat it as exploratory, find a place on the map and try and get there. And so I've sort of, as with Matt, the pendulum has swung the other way. And the mention of the Algonquin death trip is fantastic. I haven't thought about that in a long time, but I think it's very true that first sense of sort of like growth through suffering, and you're like, oh, huh, this is like, I like this. Maybe I can't explain it right now why I like it, but I like it. So yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. I definitely want to hear more about that Algonquin death trip. But Matt, you mentioned earlier about you and Pat meeting or knowing each other since high school. So along this journey, you're both kind of discovering athletics in your own way. At a certain point, you come together and you decide, hey, let's start a business together. So what's that journey like? Where is the kind of the genesis of starting a business? And was Endurance Tap the first business that you thought of to start together, or how did that culminate?
I'll answer that last question first. It was the first thing we thought about doing together. But Pat, I think you're best positioned to kind of explain how it all started.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. I think actually it relates back to what I just mentioned with this sort of catastrophic knee issue I had. So I had a bursa that kept swelling up on my right knee. Couldn't get it dealt with through sort of, you know, more simple means. So we decided to have a bursectomy. So it's a pretty like minor operation. You go in, 45 minutes, they take it out. When I woke up, it was 3.5 hours later and I had a cast from my hip to my ankle. And it turned out my patella tendon was almost fully ruptured and they had to fix that. And that led me into a full year of not being able to run and countless, you know, trips to physio and a leg brace for 3 months. I lost, 2.5 inches of circumference in my quad due to atrophy. Like it was pretty wild. But what happened during that time is, you guys know as runners, when you can't run, like what's the one thing you can't stop thinking about, right? And so I was just thinking about running nonstop. And I had this idea of this healthy alternative to a gel using maple syrup. And I sort of thought about it a bit, and Matt at that time was doing a few things with startups. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to shoot this by Matt and see what he thinks. And I think it was actually an email, Matt, that I sent to you with sort of laying out, like, I think it may have even started with like, this might be crazy, but, and Matt did exactly what he should do, which was try to sort of poke real holes in it. Like, well, what about this? What about that? Is, you know, and we sort of together got to the point where we're like, huh, this might be viable. And Matt, if you want to take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good fit and good timing, because I had done a 50K, the Vulturebait 50K in London. I don't think they run it anymore, but I'd used this one particular vanilla gel for the whole race. And after that, I couldn't even think of that gel without feeling nauseous. And so I started making my own gels using sort of different ingredients. And then when, you know, Pat suggested maple syrup, I was like, that sounds cool. No one's commercialized it. And what better way to fuel than doing something naturally? Because that's what I was doing. I was taking like honey and lime juice and salt and other sorts of things and kind of playing around with it and make my own like energy balls and stuff with coconut oils. And so, yeah, so it sounded like a great idea. And then it became, I don't know, like a 6-month kitchen exercise where we played with lots of different recipes and, you know, form factors of packaging, which has been the biggest challenge for us probably since the beginning, is just packaging stuff. But yeah, we kind of settled on a recipe that made a lot of sense. And that was, you know, maple syrup as the base, but then adding some sea salt to bring the sodium up to replenish what we sweat out. And then the ginger, because so many folks, like I'd say like estimate like half of people have trouble stomaching normal gels. And that becomes a real, you know, hindrance to performance, like either mentally, because you're afraid of having a ticking time bomb in your stomach and what's that going to mean for the day. Or you have that, you know, physical, visceral, like reaction where your body's rejecting what it is you're putting in. And, you know, seeing a lot of folks, and definitely during the ultra stuff I was doing, like a lot of people just felt like, well, maybe the body's not meant to go that long. And it's like, well, no, it's just what you're putting in your body is processed, you know, junk food effectively. And so, you know, athletes were making healthy choices 9 times out of 10 during the day when training, but when actually like active, they're putting essentially junk food into their bodies. And so it made a lot of sense. And then we kind of figured out all this stuff and lots of ridiculous things, closing pouches with hair straighteners and other weird, you know, appliances just to try to make it work. And they look super sketchy. But we ended up reaching out to Mike and Maya at Black Toe and just explained what we were doing and said, hey guys, like we're doing this. We'd love to share this with some of your athletes and your you know, kind of training groups. And they were gracious enough, interested enough to let us do that. And we kind of wrote up a survey afterwards and took everyone out for brunch afterwards. And it was really eye-opening because a lot of folks are like, yeah, like this tastes way better. I could see myself using this. But there's a few folks who had real trouble digesting normal gels and they were flipping out over this. And they said like, whatever I need to pay you, like what can I do to get more samples? I've got the Waterfront Marathon coming up. if I can just like, if I have one Norma gel, I know within 2 minutes whether it's going to go south on me. And this didn't. And so if this is going to work for me, this is going to make my marathon. And so that was cool. And so that was the real like, oh, okay, I think we really do have something here. And, you know, it's hearing stories like that all throughout the history of the company. That's been really rewarding too. You know, being at events, reading comments, meeting people, and just them kind of sharing like how meaningful the nutrition is, because it really is that, you know, that extra discipline that we all have to nail if we want to reach our performance goals, as well as just have fun and not have a, you know, literally crappy day.
Yeah. And you mentioned the fact that there was a lot of R&D, but you were your own like test subject for like 6 months pretty much, right? And obviously you might have had a situation where you can, you know, digest the goo and the different gels and stuff like that. Not to call anyone out, but at the end of the day, you also knew what it took to have something totally natural, but also why maple syrup? We didn't get into why that was the base.
Sure. Yeah. So when I was sort of, you know, in that period of not running and thinking a lot about running, and maple syrup occurred to me, I just did some research on it, and it sort of coincidentally turns out that it's a really good nutritional profile in terms of volume per calories. It matches quite closely what the more, you know, commercial gels are doing. But of course, it has all sorts of benefits because it has all these antioxidants and minerals in it. So I just thought, okay, well, you know what? And obviously, it's like so stereotypically Canadian, as natural as it can get. It is vegan, right? Unlike, you know, honey-based sources. So it just ticked all sorts of boxes. And that was really it. It just seemed, once we came to that conclusion, it just sort of seemed logical.
Yeah, I'll tell you, if I can, just my journey, because I think a lot of people might be hopefully interested in hearing this, because when I started running, I was using another gel. And the thing about that gel is I always had to time it with an aid station because I couldn't let it sit in my mouth. I always had to wash it down. And like, I felt like I was, and everybody's different. Everyone's unique in how they take in nutrition. But me personally, I felt like I was eating something and then I needed to wash it down with something. And then I remember kind of when you were starting out, and I remember Black Toe kind of promoting this, and I remember that. And I'm like, yeah, no, like I don't need another thing that's going to be like sitting, you know, in my throat. And after a bit of time, someone was running with it and said, no, seriously, try this. And I remember taking it in and I'm like, hold on, that went down way too easy. And the thing about it was like, it went down so easy. I was totally expecting to have to squeeze it into my mouth. The consistency is not what you're thinking. So when people think maple syrup, they think like, you know, like you have to flip over this jug and like squeeze it out into your mouth. That's not the consistency. And that's what I really, really, really appreciated about the product, is you don't have to think about it. And I did not have to time it with an aid station. I just popped it and ran, and then I could keep going. And I don't have to like, because when you're running, you don't want to think about too many things. But if you're calculating, if I need this gel, then I need to have this water, and then if my aid station's at 6 kilometers, if I knew, it's too much math. But what I really appreciate is that you could just pop it and go, and there's no thinking whatsoever. And that's what I really liked about it.
Absolutely. I mean, we used to talk a lot about, yeah, you're able to separate your nutrition and hydration strategy. If you're having a great day and you're ahead of your schedule, or you're not having a great day and you're a little bit behind, you don't have to get further behind because you got to delay taking in some nutrition. I think the added benefit, I mean, like, because it goes down thinner, that does help with the digestion. But what also is that the flavor leaves the mouth really quickly. So the flavor fatigue thing, like I described earlier, right, I couldn't think of that gel without feeling nauseous, doesn't seem to happen for athletes. Like, we've got athletes, and especially like in the latter stages of a long event, TAP seems to be like the only thing they can still look forward to taking. And the benefit of that too is, you know, we haven't gone down the path of creating like 50 different flavors, because we really haven't really had to. Like, folks don't seem to tire of the base flavor. So it allows us to kind of keep it, you know, really simple. But again, it's just, you know, we've got like 200 mile, you know, athletes who can still take it like that depth into their efforts, like after whatever it is, 36 hours. And that's a huge benefit for someone. You can count on something. So you don't have to have lots of different things like a cocktail in your stomach which is just, you know, adds additional risk to someone finishing strong.
Yeah, that's what it is, because like it's not broken, so don't fix it kind of thing. So, you know, why introduce flavors or anything of the sort? But I believe because of the natural ingredients, it works for 99% of the individual. They might just have an affinity to like a different syrup over maple syrup, but I don't see that as a problem. I've had people that just want to drink it just because they like sweets, which is like, and they're not athletes at all, which is interesting. But I must say that what's different, and we've had conversations within different runners and all that stuff. I think the pattern there is the fact that you were able to get so consistent with every batch, and people know what they're getting. They don't have to be worried about if the black toe is carrying the right flavor or just variety for variety's sake, you know. And it's not a typical company that's just trying to get in ahead and just having options in order to fit a need. Elites, I've seen elites use it, utilizing this as their primary source, whether they're ambassador or they're not. It's like the go-to product to have. And interesting enough, I've been to London, the UK, and seen people use that without any connection at all, where, you know, because we know the founders or anything of the sort. So it's a proven product. And I think ultimately the ingredients is what everyone is kind of harping on to find out, you know, it's maple syrup, but without giving away too much. There were other things, and you touched on it briefly, like ginger and stuff like that. What were the other catalysts that make it a complete solution?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, we have a real advantage starting with maple syrup because it covers off nutritionally so many aspects. So then really what you get into is you have to replace the sodium. So we use sea salt actually from Vancouver Island. So it's Canadian sea salt. And then the ginger, as I think Matt may have mentioned earlier, is a digestive aid. So it's real ginger, it's dry ginger. And that's all you need. We sometimes say, you know, everything you need, nothing you don't, you know, fuel simply. That's our motto. So it's all about keeping it simple. When Matt and I were doing those kitchen sessions he mentioned for months and sort of cooking things up, it was really interesting because we actually went in the other direction first. We like put a lot of stuff into it. And we had this moment where we're like, I actually remember specifically in the morning, Matt sent me a text because whatever we were working on the night before was like a solid brick in the pot with like a spoon sticking out of it. And he was like, sort of like, dude, I think we need to think about this differently. And so we said, okay, how much can we take out and still make it work? And so that's what we did. We literally just took away as much as we possibly could and retained the elements that we needed for it to perform. Almost like what you do with a race car, sort of stripping away parts until you get to the lightest weight, most high performance version.
Well, it's three ingredients, easy to pronounce each ingredient. It's not like red number 5, like yellow number 12, like simple, natural ingredients. The ginger, people are seriously curious about because they're like, I don't really like how ginger tastes, but it doesn't really come through in the gel. It's not like, first of all, I don't know if I have a sophisticated palate, but I don't eat a gel and say, wow, that's very gingery. Like you don't really notice it. You notice the syrup, the maple syrup, and you notice like the sweetness and just how like easy it goes down. But, you know, maybe some of the salt too, but everything complements those three ingredients complement each other.
The ginger is subtle. I mean, as is the salt, but what I actually find is they cut the sweetness of it too. So it kind of evens out the flavor a little bit, and everyone's palate's different. Like some people might taste certain things more than others, but yeah, usually it's just there, but it's subtle enough. And, you know, it's the same thing when we wanted to do the caffeinated version. And so it's just like, all right, well, what are the fewest things we can add? And so we've evaluated different, you know, natural sources for caffeine and went with a green bean coffee extract. And it didn't change the flavor much. Like it's a subtle flavor. Very subtle. So you can, it's like, it's just a little bit there. So you kind of like know it's different if and so on. But again, it was a similar sort of thing where we didn't want to play with the flavor. We just wanted to have a different functional benefit. And, you know, caffeine's a key ingredient for a lot of folks in their fueling plans. So I thought it made a lot of sense and it's been adopted really well.
You know, I will say one thing, and this could be a claim to fame, it could be a marketing strategy. There's not a single person on this planet that's put another gel on a stack of pancakes than endurance time. Okay.
Yeah, I've heard that too. I've done it too.
I have legit done it too. There's a story out there somewhere buried of me putting it on my pancakes and it legit works.
Yeah, I heard there's
not a single gel company out there that can claim that they do that.
I think we actually used to talk about that a bit, that what we referred to jokingly as the breakfast test, right? And so going back to what Matt said about athletes essentially eating junk food, it's like, well, okay, so think about eating one of the other products just to eat. And you're like, no way, right? I mean, obviously I do it when I'm running. There's no way I would just eat that thing. Well, then why are you eating it? You know, like that's sort of like a bit of like a logical fallacy when you start to think it through. So we used to talk about the breakfast test, like, well, would you put that on your breakfast? And we're like, well, yeah, we'd put ours on our breakfast for sure, right? So definitely you're not the only one. I've done it myself. When I was doing the Ride to Conquer Cancer, I took a bunch of pouches and some of them ended up on my breakfast. You know, people take them camping and that sort of thing too.
Yeah, another test is like, share with a friend who's not a crazy runner and would do anything to squeak out some better performance. And if they wouldn't have it, maybe that's also a sign that it's not maybe the best thing to be taking in.
So curious about the R&D process itself. There might have been something that came up nutritionally that you've added and then pretty much take out of it, because I'm sure you're like, okay, we need to have energy, we need to have caffeine and the ginger to soothe your stomach. But you might have thought of something additional that you've added to it, then removed it. Without giving away too much, is there anything that was like big red X that you've tried?
I'd say there was during that preliminary stage. Before we realized we wanted it as simple as possible, I don't, to be honest, remember exactly what we were putting in, but we sort of were like, oh, maybe it'd be good to put this. I think we did try a couple flavors, like, oh, why don't we try some, you know, chocolate powder and things like that. And then, you know, none of that made it better, right? Like, it's sort of like anything else we added made it worse. So we ended up taking that all out. But from a nutritional standpoint, there really wasn't anything we had to add. I mean, that's the real beauty of maple syrup as our base material.
I think we probably played with proteins and fats and so on, but it doesn't really fit the way most athletes are looking to fuel. I mean, there's certainly alternative, you know, approaches you might take that have, you know, different macros in them. But I really feel like the core use case of a gel, it didn't make sense. So there's certainly product roadmap ideas that are always kicking around. But yeah, I say like, it kind of came together pretty kind of quickly through that focal point of simplicity.
And to be totally clear, for someone that hasn't used endurance tap at all, it's a fueling gel. So it's not a pre or post workout thing that you use. I mean, a post could be that same pancake idea what you all talk about. But not everyone knows how to use gel. We're still introducing gels to new runners now. So to be clear about what part of your athletic journey do you use it, or while you're working out?
Yeah, 100%. Endurance tap is a during fuel. You can use it, you know, as often really as you like. We have the advantage that you can actually get in more calories per hour because you can digest it so well. We have athletes who use it every like 15, 20 minutes, right? Rather than sort of 45 to 60 that you might with other products. And we also do have a sort of smaller subset of our customers who use it sort of in the context of pre. So they'll take one on the way to the pool, on the way to the gym, just when they're maybe on an empty stomach and they feel like they need that little hit of energy before they get started.
One of the things I find interesting is when it comes to marketing and stuff like that, gel companies, nutrition companies are coming up with 20 different flavors to try to appeal to every palate, every individual that is consuming the products in a race or training, whatever. You forever have had one flavor and one package, which is extraordinary. You didn't feel the need to add like raspberry or vanilla or any other flavor in there, which I thought was extraordinary, until you came out with the caffeine, which was a game changer in itself. Was that part of your, I guess, guiding principles when you started Endurance Tap to say, let's just stick to the basics, it doesn't need to change?
I'd like to say it was, but I think like pretty quickly it became that. I mean, early on we had plans and we did like a crowdfunding campaign. The plan was to do, you know, the base flavor and chocolate and vanilla and all that. But then again, just like with the goal of having simplicity, we ended up not doing that, but just monitoring and asking people and like trying to get, you know, getting feedback, which we've always, you know, really relied on is feedback from the community to see how they're liking things, what ideas do they have for the next thing. And like flavors really never come up. Different functional ideas might come up and other different product extensions, but the flavor is never really been an issue. And so to Dre's point earlier, if the retailer's got tap, you know what it is, it works for you, and it's all good. And so that's why we've been focusing on different form factors and ways to consume Endurance Tap. So we've got a whole sustainability system that we're now building out to try to reduce plastics, and with that comes performance benefits and pricing benefits for customers and so on. And this year we launched the Stroop waffles, which have really caught fire with folks, either who have always loved Stroop waffles and kind of found new options with us, or folks who never tried them, maybe heard about them. And then once they try them, like, oh, this is what everyone's talking about. And so, yeah, Stroop waffles are just sort of like, it's almost like a cookie. It's like kind of two layers of a really thin like wafer, and with some, nice gooey goodness on the inside. And they're actually like a Dutch creation. And there's a little bit of debate on exactly who gets to take credit for it. But it's especially really common in the cycling community. But you'll go and get your coffee kind of mid-ride, and you put the Stroop waffle on top, and that kind of the steam warms it up and kind of gives you that extra sort of like flavor experience. And it's been great. And so it's a really good way to mix up your fueling strategy as well, where you can maybe do a gel and then a waffle. They still digest really well. We're still keeping if you look at the ingredients list for our Stroop waffles compared to any others out there, it's dramatically shorter. Again, you can pronounce all the words, and they're working well. We brought out a gluten-free one because that was feedback we were getting from the community as well. It's looking for a gluten-free option like the gel is. So we have a lot of celiacs who kind of really rely on our products. And then, yeah, Pat, anything else to add?
How do they pair with ice cream?
Excellent. I would say my only addition maybe to the little marketing detail is that I think at the beginning, a good way to think about what we did is that we created a choice for the customers versus sort of a comparison. So it's like, everyone's out there selling oranges and we started to sell an apple. We didn't try and make a better orange. We didn't like water down our orange or sprinkle some seaweed in our orange. We made an apple. And so that apple was standout on its own. And I think that helped us keep that one SKU for so many years, just because it was like this standout, distinct product.
Yeah, and people don't realize that are just consuming apples this whole time that there are other, to just run with your metaphor, there's other fruit out there, right? Like there's other, maybe not, maybe you create the differentiation in the market because you create this product that's different. But, a lot of people will just continue consuming the same type of stuff without realizing at some point, oh, maybe there's an alternative.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary to change your nutrition plan, right? Like if it's something that's working for you or working for you most of the time, or maybe you think it's working for you, you don't even realize how much better it might be if you're to try something different. So that's probably our biggest, challenge is overcoming that tendency to want to stick with what you know and take a flyer on something new. What we find is once someone tries it, they immediately notice a difference for all the reasons cited earlier. So that's really, and the community has been great for that. Like Jonathan, you heard about it through someone else, and that's so commonly how things happen. And when it comes to us trying to raise awareness and marketing and so on, we've always found like the best investment ever is getting a pouch into the hand of an athlete and giving them the chance to try it. That's 10 out of 10, the best way for us to spend our precious marketing dollars.
Yeah, and it makes sense because in reality, none of us like to try something new on a run or actually at a race, because that's the time when if it doesn't work, it's the worst time for it to have a bad reaction. And, speaking of running, there's a few athletes I know in Hamilton, like Krista Deschaine, Reed Coolset. They're elite Canadian Olympians that uses the product. So imagine that they have to pack that to leave. And knowing that your product is like an essential checkmark that they have to use in order to perform, and for Canada. You know what I mean? So there's so much kudos that I'm sure that comes back in the form of feedback, which you all take feedback in order to improve on the product. What is it like to work with like a Canadian elite, or even just the feedback and kind of the quirks or anything that we don't know that would be interesting to us?
Yeah, I think like by and large, that whole crew that uses Tap are just like the nicest folks. And the cool thing is a lot of them, I don't remember necessarily how we connected with all of them, but a lot of them, it just sort of turned out they were using Endurance Tap and they either got in touch with us or we found out. And then we were like, hey, we can just sort of give it to you. If you need it, just let us know. We'll hook you up. But that's how a lot of those came about. And of course, Evan Dunphy got, you know, the bronze over in Japan. He uses Tap. So that was pretty cool to play even, you know, the 0.01% part of that amazing performance that he did. And Dre, to your question, I mean, we actually solicit feedback from elite athletes as well, just as much as we do from the sort of, you know, people like us, the non-elite athletes. And they, you know, they sometimes have different feedback for us, but it's often very similar. And they use the product for the same reasons that we use the product. And so it's it can be quite valuable, but we weigh it, I think, in a similar way to, you know, to the rest of us. You know, Reed just threw it down in his first ultra and, of course, won it in Quebec last weekend, right? So he's like flying through the Tap now that he's pushed his distance out, which is cool to see. So, yeah.
Yeah, and those relationships are really important to us too, just because it's amazing seeing those incredible athletes using our products to, you know, fuel their success. You know, I mean, you know, Gary Robbins, an incredibly respected, accomplished ultra runner, you know, at West. You know, he's been using this for years. He's been so generous with his time and feedback and so on. And we're now working with Paula Finley, a former Olympian, and she's now killing it at the, you know, long distance try. And, you know, she was using us for quite a while before we actually started to officially work with her. And that's been really important because all these elite athletes, I mean, we made a kind of call very early on that we weren't going to take the more traditional approach of like just getting an athlete to just start using our stuff and pay them some money and have them talk about it. But rather, it's all happened almost, you know, from these athletes reaching out to us and say, hey, guys, we'll have to like help you guys out and use the product. And it's been amazing for us. And so we've been able to really kind of stick to that early values we wanted to keep in the company. And so it's been rewarding working with these athletes for many, many years now. It's been a very consistent relationship we've had. It's been great.
Yeah, I love your Changemaker program. And I like kind of Jacob Puzzi that you had kind of recently on there. Jesse Zappo is one of them, like well-known figure in New York City. And then all the like the day-to-day like athletes that are so inspiring. Denosha is part of that crew, and there's so many incredible athletes, whether or not they're elites, whether they're elites or your everyday athlete that is inspire us through their altruism or like generosity or just things they're doing in the community environment, stuff like that, speaks to what your values are as a product, as a company, and as individuals. And I think it's an outstanding relationship that you have with these athletes and how they're doing their own thing in this space, but also using Endurance Tap as a platform to get the word out for some of the things that are important to them and others.
Yeah, and that's Team Tap.
That's very important to us. I think Matt and I, you know, in recent years have put more effort into bringing our own personal values into the business. And you can start all sorts of businesses in this world and you can choose how to run them and choose whether or not you're going to give back to your community. And we've definitely made the choice that we're going to continue to do this, work with change makers. We're part of 1% for the planet. So we're donating, you know, 1% of our top line revenue to environmental causes, et cetera. And we just think it's really important. I mean, it's like we wouldn't exist if it weren't for the community out there who uses our product. And so it would be sort of silly if we're not supporting that community that's supporting us, right? It's like a circle. So that's the way we look at it.
Yeah, I love the way it's laid out. So for those who don't know, you could go on the actual blog or the website itself, really, that explains how the Changemaker program works. But working with different ambassadors, it's then tailored to what their interests are for, you know, giving back and working with different non-for-profit. So the beauty about that is you didn't have to stick to one charity. Each of the individuals were able to choose what's, you know, speak to them more. Maybe they have a charity that's closer, that's affecting their own family. And that makes it that much more diversified, but just smart way of doing it. You're not just, you know, pointing at any one charity and assuming that they're in more need compared to others. But yeah, I really like how the Changemaker program itself works out, and each ambassador is able to kind of do a check mark on what they care about.
Yeah, I think, you know, we kind of, you know, reached out to the community and said, hey, if there's something you feel really passionate about, and you're doing things to support it, we'd love to help with that. So that's where the discount codes for good kind of came about. And so each change maker who supports either mental health or environmental concerns or has more of a general sort of community focus, they all have their own personal code. And if someone enters that code at checkout, instead of the customer getting a discount, a percentage of that purchase goes towards that change maker's nonprofit of choice. And so we thought that was just kind of a really good way where, you know, folks don't necessarily need to get discounted product. Instead, when they use it, now them using that product has that much more meaning for them. Mm-hmm. You know, there's of course meaning in the training and all the time we put into it. But now every time you use it, you can think about Jacob, who's supporting mental health, or any of the other, you know, change makers who are kind of going out there and just, you know, putting themselves further out there. And it takes effort to pull those things. We just wanted to recognize that and support them however we could.
It's less of a discount code and more of like a, you know, for good code.
Exactly.
Ped, you recently, I say you and Matt recently joined the 1% consortium. That was a big deal. I know, like, you did a lot of promotion on that and spoke a lot about that. Just listening to kind of you both talk about your values and a product and stuff like that. Could you maybe walk through kind of the importance of joining that program and what that was like?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, so just first, for those who don't know, 1% for the Planet is an organization that was co-founded by Yvon Chouinard, the founder of Patagonia, the clothing company, who's, you know, very environmentally forward and progressive company. And essentially, business members of 1% for the Planet sign a pledge, so to speak, that you will donate 1% of your top line revenue to environmental causes. And they audit us. So we have to give them, you know, financial details, and we have to show them where we donate the money. So it's like a legit organization. And the reason they do it as 1% of top line revenue is, I think there's a quote from Yvon Chouinard, something like 1% of nothing is nothing or something. So if you said to a business, well, you can donate X percentage of your profits, it's very easy to manipulate your, you know, balance sheet and not really have profits. So it doesn't matter if you're making money or losing money, you're donating 1% of your top line sales to environmental causes. So that's the organization. It's really cool. There's some great companies involved in it. And for Matt and I, the reason that we got into it is as we started to really look at Endurance Tap and reflect on our personal values and how we could bring more of our values into the company, we realized that, you know, any company like Patagonia is such a great example. You're trying to do good, but you're impacting the environment in some way, right? And so taking steps to offset that impact, it's very, very important to us. And so that's one of, you know, many things we're working on at the moment. But we joined 1% for the Planet for that reason. We haven't actually really promoted this, but we, as of a few months ago, we're 100% powered by renewables. So we're Bullfrog powered business, our offices and production. So we pay a little extra every month to offset our electricity use with renewable sources. And as Matt mentioned earlier, we're actually putting a lot of effort into our packaging and sort of packaging systems to eliminate or reduce plastic, I should say.
We also added the carbon offset option in our checkout on the website. And so when customers go to make a purchase, they can choose to offset the impact of shipping by adding a small fee. And that fee goes towards groups that are looking to you know, help in those efforts. And amazing, I'd say like 70 to 80% of customers choose that option. It's totally elective. But it's catching on. It's just always kind of little things that you can do that hopefully all add up to to more significant impact.
Yeah, it's pretty dope that the entirety of it. But we were talking about trail run at the top of the actual podcast, and without the trails, we can't run. So it's like it makes sense to have that cradle to cradle method behind your business, and, you know, finding every part of it that you can offset, give back, and just like making that work. And for all the business that haven't found that, you know, check mark on how to do that yet, they could take you guys as an example on maybe one of those places that they could reach out to. But again, it just speaks volume on you know, why we all use the product, because we know the founders, and it's like take feedback. So those things are just like key to us versus a brand that's manufactured somewhere else that we don't know about.
Thanks for that, Trey.
Yeah, thank you.
And again, so you're internationally known. I did mention London, or just say the UK in general. Has there been any feedback from a country you're so surprised about? You're like, they're using tap there kind of scenario?
Oh, man. It's sort of this constant thing that Matt and I deal with inquiries from other countries that people want tap. Like, it's pretty wild, actually. We get inquiries from all over the place. We used to actually ship a bit into Europe. And we've shipped into, you know, most countries in Europe via the UK. We had a good friend there. That was before Brexit and things got a lot more complicated. So we haven't done that in a while. But, you know, we've gotten product into, we had a guy do a video review in Singapore. This really neat sort of vlog, like trying endurance tap. We have people in Australia who use it, who want more of it, you know, and the shipping is just so sort of prohibitive at the moment. So it's wild how many countries tap has found its way to. And how many countries we get inquiries from people going, hey, how do I get it? You know, we have people in Costa Rica that use it. It's almost like you name it, and it's like there's at least one or two people in whichever country it is that have discovered it somehow. We have a couple guys in Spain who use it. They got their relatives in the States to send it over, et cetera. So yeah, that actually happens way more than you would expect.
That's amazing.
It didn't hurt that you had all the international runners at Scotia that one year that you guys were on a course. And social media definitely helps, because, you know, everyone's following everybody, and then someone sees endurance tap, like, that's intriguing. Like, what's that about? So are there any plans that go to branch out internationally? Like, I know you get your
soul. They're smiling. is that you're giving away too much. You're giving away
Wait,
too much.
Wait, do we just touch into the what's next for endurance tap topic?
Instantly.
Oh, come on. It's... What's next is world domination. So we
don't even think about, like, yeah, I know it's selling more apples, but at the end of the day, Pat, like, if you think about it, like, there's a demand, right? You're not forcing the demand. There's actual people that are saying, we've heard of this, we've seen it, we want this. So is it, I mean, you've had to have thought about this. This is not the earth-shattering news.
No, this isn't the first time Matt and I have considered this. So we 100% will be expanding outside of North America. We feel like we still have a lot of room to go within North America, especially south of the border. You know, we're very strong across Canada. We do have, you know, some retailers in the States, and, you know, quite a solid direct-to-consumer business in the States. But there's room to grow there. But yeah, we know there's demand. At the very, very beginning, Matt and I cross-referenced countries that import a lot of Canadian maple syrup with countries that have a lot of endurance athletes. We sort of built out this chart, and we're like, okay, you know, France, Germany, Japan, UK, et cetera, are great markets for endurance tap. So that'll definitely happen. It's just a matter of essentially getting to it.
You heard it here first, Japan. You heard it here first.
Konnichiwa.
Yeah, I think the name of the game, though, is, I mean, you know, we're still in startup mode. So there's only so many hours in the day. And so, you know, there's still... You know, I was at an event on the weekend, and I think, you know, the 20 people that were there, you know, 12 people had heard of tap and tried it, but 8 of them hadn't. And that's right in our own backyard. Yo. And so, you know, there's whatever, 40% of just that, you know, like, sample set of folks. So that's the challenge. It's like, you know, eyes are bigger than the stomach sometimes. And, like, you know, I think we're laughing because my constant refrain is like, how are we gonna get in Australia?
Yeah.
Like, just try, you know, like, and it's like, no, we got to focus, and we've got so much room to grow here. So that's a challenge, is like, you know, wanting to achieve so many things, but, you know, how do you do it in a sustainable way and hold true to your values and do it in a way where, you know, we're self-funded and we're, you know, we have to kind of make this happen. So you have to constantly make choices, and you have to balance different priorities.
I think, if there's any listeners out there who run big import/distribution businesses in other countries, and you're a tap fan, you know where to find us.
Yeah, I can only imagine the logistics there. in just in general, where it's it would be considered a food product, right? So that has its own challenges, and you know, as you said, you're just figuring out where maple syrup goes and check it off the list.
Yeah, it's not like shipping T-shirts across the border. Like everyone, every country has their own food regulations and requirements, and so you know, we couldn't have made a more difficult business to scale globally.
Yeah. And then there's no such thing as like LCBO for like nutrition fueling. You know, there's no like one checkbox that you have to fill and then be at all LCBO or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good idea, but yeah, unfortunately not.
So we've probably got a few people that are joining us because we're announcing or have announced the contest, run a little contest with you guys. So before we get into kind of what's next, because I'm sure people have been like, I have to listen to this whole podcast just to get like, you know, a clue as to, you know, how I can get some additional entries into this contest. So before we get there, why don't we just throw out kind of the secret word? Pat, Matt, you got a secret word you can give us?
Why don't we go with, if we do more than one word, we could just do all natural.
That's it.
Yeah. Secret word is all natural. You heard it here first. All right, we got there. Okay, all thank right. you for joining the contest, and good luck, everybody. So, Matt, Pat, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. I know stuff is brewing. Oh, wait, we didn't talk about the coffee. Sorry. There's, like, a lot of stuff brewing. I know you've done some collabs with Krista in the past and others. There's stuff I'm sure you're thinking about that's next. Is there anything you maybe want to share with us?
Yeah, so I think we, you know, we're always working on something. We do have a couple potential new product launches that will be coming over the next few months. Something that's a little more immediate and should be happening in around when this episode is airing is a bit of an overhaul to our packaging. So we've created a system which is intended to A, reduce plastic use, B, provide a recyclable option, and C, provide a higher performance solution for athletes. So what we're doing is our multi-serve 15-shot pouch was extremely popular. We're actually introducing a new 28-shot bottle, which is fully recyclable, and it's going to be sold for the same cost as 24 gels. So it's going to be an awesome deal. And then we have a nice little branded Endurance Tap soft flask that holds up to 5 shots a tap. So you'll be able to use that as a system when you're going out for longer runs, and you can take, you know, tap a lot quicker if you want to through that, or take more. And then we're making some changes to our flagship pouches as well, which I won't go into all the details, but essentially we're reducing material use, making it a little bit more of an environmentally friendly option, which is really important to us. So that will all be happening in early, mid-September, in around there.
Crossing fingers.
Crossing fingers.
Nice. I'm excited though. We all are used to the original form factors and the way we use it. And I know some people add tap to, you know, water it down a little bit just to have as a as you go and then still gel up, just that different method. So the way you're introducing it is very, very sustainable, because similar to how they do stuff in Europe and races there, it's flasks and also reusable cups. So there's no one-time use cups on the races. You literally get a Adidas cup and you toss it in and they wash it again and then you repurpose it. But yeah, just being ahead of the game by doing stuff like that is impressive.
Yeah, we got these fun shot glasses too. So you can pour yourself a shot and you know, slam it before you go out. So now you don't have to just kind of use a piece of plastic and throw it out. You just pour it, take it, or line up a whole, you know, do a whole lineup of them. If you're doing an indoor training session even, you know, you can kind of have those all lined up and just take them on whatever fueling schedule you got.
I'm worried about you, Matt.
No, but that makes sense. It makes sense because
we got our 6 packs of tap and we got our shot glasses. You know, there's a common theme here.
There's a little behind the scenes, like, yeah, things that we're not really, we're starting to clue in. There's something about apples, shot glasses. Yes. We're not sure what's happening, but something's happening.
Yeah, it makes sense. As I said earlier, I seen a thing I was impressed with, and Krista had an exact bottle of the amount of fluid she'll need plus a tap taped on there. But that was already pre-configured, and she knew exactly when she was going to grab that. And hopefully I'm not giving away too much, but I had to take a photo of that. In reality, there are people that use it precisely. So it's not just you take the entire bottle of it. So I think the shot glass idea works well too. As I said, if it's something at home, you're kind of like doing just stationary bikes on, you know.
What's next for you individually, Matt, Pat? Matt, we'll start with you.
I'm just keeping on, you know, doing my thing. I think, you know, we're getting into the fall. I've got a number of gravel races set up. You know, I was hoping to do some triathlons, but it's just not like, just did not have the training time to get ready for them. So, also hoping to get in with, to do some trail runs as well. And some trail races. There's some great series that are happening, like Happy Trails and a few others that just have tons of great events. And so it'd be nice to get out and see a bunch of, friendly, familiar faces and, you know, finish off the year with some good events and yeah, and then start to plot for next year.
How about you, Pat?
Yeah. So for me, I'd say, you know, still getting out for the shorter runs at the moment, spending more time on my bike, you know, building mileage, sort of doing the up around 100K type thing. And I'm actually wanting to do a bit of bike packing this fall, something new for me. So do a couple multi-day trips on the bike. And as Matt said, there's a lot of events now that are cropping up, which is exciting. We're involved in a number of them through the next couple months. So we're hoping, you know, fingers crossed, we'll get to get out to some of them ourselves, maybe set up our tent, maybe, you know, run or ride some of them and just get back out there and see everybody again. So that's exciting.
That is exciting. Yeah. And I know it's just more great stuff to come from you guys, from Endurance Tap. Like I said earlier, lover of the product, like totally believe in it. And it's carried me through many a marathon. So thank you both for sharing how you guys came together. I almost said how you gelled, but you know, how did you, but I did anyway, that's not editing out. But
I haven't heard that pun before. That's a good one.
I know.
But it's just great, like, to understand how you came together and how the product came to life. And we had a rally on and they kind of walked through how even those gentlemen came together and how they thought this up, and listening to their process and testing ingredients and listening to yours. It's, you know, we don't appreciate that when we're on a run and we just tap the cap and we just pop it back. Like, we don't get that like instant, you know, like you're doing the commercials where it's like that movie scene where it's like right into a person's head and thinking about the manufacturing of this thing. You don't get to appreciate that, but there's a lot that goes into these products. And what we love is that, you know, you're making a buzz, you're making a name for yourselves in the community. And we're really, really excited to see what happens next. So thanks for joining us, guys.
Amazing. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. That was tons of fun.
Yeah. One of the things that JG didn't add was you guys were the first on the list when we started the podcast. Yeah, right?
100%.
Like literally number one. Awesome.
100%.
But it wouldn't make sense to just like go at you right away. It's like, it could work, but I think it matters now because we've spoken to so many people in the past that has just mentioned tap. Just, it's a verb, you know?
Reed, Krista.
Just tap, yeah. tap. And then it's like a household name for anyone that do any kind of athleticism.
That's awesome.
Kind words. Thank you so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, thank
guys.
You so much. And that's no neat problem. To know.
With that being said, this is Longest Drive Podcast. Peace.
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 Peace.